Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and then New Jersey. An episode of The Crocodile Hunter changed his life. And he then earned a bachelor's degree in wildlife biology from Grand Valley State University. From 2008 to 2015, he held various leadership roles in the animal services sector in Louisiana, Tennessee, and New Mexico. Since 2014, he's been the president and CEO of Michigan Humane, which is a nonprofit organization providing animal welfare and sheltering services to the metropolitan Detroit area. His name, Matt Pepler. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Matt Pepler, CEO and President of Michigan Humane. Matt, welcome, an honor to have you.
Jack, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here today. I've seen your guest list, and what an elite group of folks I'm here a part of.
Thank you. Can we start by talking about your childhood, your mom and your dad, please?
Yeah, 100%. So I got to tell you, you could not find two more supportive people in the world. So I was born in West Michigan, grew up in New Jersey. My dad was an executive for a for-profit company for a long time, was a CEO in many companies, and always would tell us, I do what I do, so you can do what your heart tells you to do. And so it was always, they're always very supportive. He was always my coach. I remember one time telling my dad, you know, when I'm done growing up, which I now found out is a constant journey, I'll never be done. But when I'm done, I want to be, you know, half the man you are. And his response was, you can't be half the man. You have an obligation to be better than I am, but you have to define it for yourself. And my mom was the same way. I'm not sure my mom has ever done anything for herself in her entire life. So I have two of the most supportive parents in the world, and I pride myself and credit them with the drive and the passion and the efforts that I've had throughout my career.
Where did you get your love for animals?
You know, I've always had that. So I spent a lot of time outside. I was one of those kids, you know, after we moved from West Michigan to New Jersey, I spent probably, from 8 a.m. until 8 p.m. in the woods, just trouncing through the Rancocas Creek area there in southeast of Philadelphia. And I've always had a passion for the role that pets play in our lives. Everyone has a story of a pet that they loved, of a pet that got them through a hard time, of just the experiences they've had. And then as I've grown in my career, I've come to realize that pets change our lives, that we change our lives through our pets and for our pets. And they have a profound impact on who we are. And I'm really honored and lucky to be in a community with an organization that I think shares that value.
Let's go to Grand Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
You're at Grand Valley State University.
I am.
2 years into a degree toward advertising, public relations, and you watch a TV show.
I do. So first I have to tell you, I was not a great student in college. I spent a lot of time trying as hard as I could to get kicked out, but I didn't do it. 2 years, I started college at Grand Valley is in advertising and public relations. And I love people. I love talking to people. I love talking about the work that we do, about what I'm passionate about. But it wasn't what I wanted to do. I didn't want to spend my life in the corporate world. I wanted to spend my life doing something special. And I remember sitting on the couch in my apartment and watching The Crocodile Hunter. And it wasn't really what he was doing that caught my attention. It was the passion he was doing it with. And another, you asked previously about my dad, another kind of philosophy he gave me was, be passionate about something and you're successful. Don't judge in how much other people make, how much money people have, all the things they have. If you're passionate about something, go be successful. And so I decided that that wasn't what I wanted to do. And I ended up transferring and changing my major to wildlife biology. I remember the conversation. My dad and my mom were kind enough to help put me through college. And after the second year, I went and went, you know, Dad, I'm gonna change my major. And he goes, okay, what are you gonna do? Economics, business? I go, wildlife biology. And he says, okay, I guess so. I guess let's follow your heart. I do this so you can follow your heart. But after I took this job, I remember I took him over to the athletic club, the Detroit Athletic Club, for dinner. And he goes, you know what, Matt, let's celebrate. I'm gonna buy this. And I go, Dad, you can't. I'm the member here. I'm going to buy you dinner for all you've done for me. And I remember he looks over at me and says, man, I got to tell you something. When you said you were going to change your major to wildlife biology, I never thought it was going to work out, because I believed in you, but I never thought it was going to work out. But he is so glad it did. And today I find myself in an amazing role with an amazing organization. I've never looked back and never done anything different with my career.
If there's a young listener tonight thinking about doing something differently, talk about following your heart.
Oh, I would tell anyone, if you're passionate about something, go do it. My philosophy is, if you do things for the right reasons, things will work out for you. Good things will happen. And just follow your heart, because there's so many, you know, there's so many nonprofits doing amazing work here. There's so many organizations changing people's lives. And whether it's changing people's lives or just doing something you love, don't let anyone tell you can't do it. And follow your heart and realize there's going to be down times, there's going to be up times, there's going to be challenges. And in my career, it was every time I changed a job, I'd look at what didn't I do well and discarded that and built a foundation on what I did do well. And I consider myself a work in progress, but I have to tell you, there is nothing I feel more proud about than going home and realizing that you have done something to change the world. I'm not solving hunger. I'm not curing cancer. But if you go home and say, I did something good today, you've made the world a better place, and you should feel proud about that.
Talking about high times, tough times, 2002 to 2008, you were an animal cruelty investigator, West Michigan. Yep. Talk about that chapter, Matt.
Yeah, that's a challenging job. So I still teach police officers now cruelty investigations and human violence and animal cruelty and their correlation. What you can't do is associate yourself with the suffering of every animal. If you do that, you can't do this job very long. But you have to recognize that with every act of cruelty, there's an act of kindness on the other side of that. So it was a hard job realizing what people are capable of doing. And then as I've grown in my career, you recognize that animal cruelty isn't a crime against an animal. It's a crime against your community. And it usually doesn't happen in isolation. It's usually in conjunction with other issues. If there's an animal being actively abused in the family, chances are there's probably a human being abused in that situation. If there's someone being neglected, then there's usually other forms of neglect. And we've come to find out that my work was a gateway into creating better lives for everyone involved in that situation. And I did get a lot of pride in putting those who should be in jail for animal cruelty. But the reality is, most of it is people who just need help. Most animal cruelty isn't cruelty by intent, it's cruelty by lack of education. And I always believed, as a law enforcement officer, if you don't know, it's my job to teach you. If you don't care, that's when we can look at enforcement activities. But most of my job as a cruelty investigator was understanding what resources people didn't have access to, what knowledge they didn't have access to, little things. Like in the winter, your dog needs to eat more because it burns more calories. And if you feed your dog the same amount and he lives outside, he's going to lose weight and get thin. People don't know that. So we teach you and we help you. And we have a food pantry now that can help provide that services. But it's a tough job. It was a hard job. But it was something I'm really proud of in that work.
We're talking to Matt Pepper. If you want to learn more, www.michiganhumane.org. And I'm Jack Prasula, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Prasula. We're with Matt Pepper, CEO, President, Michigan Humane. Matt, I quote you, Katrina changed my life. Let's go back to August 2005. We've just been watching the last couple of weeks a disaster in L.A., but we had another disaster in Katrina.
Yeah. So that was a moment that changed the trajectory of my career and frankly changed the trajectory of Michigan Humane. We used that experience to direct who we are and what we do today and what our focus is. But in 2005, I had the honor, truly it was an honor, to be able to help people in New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina. And there's a particular experience that changed how I look at a pet's role in our lives. And it involved Tylertown, Mississippi. We were helping the Humane Society of Louisiana, which had flooded, lost all of its animals. All of the animals were inside. The whole building had flooded, lost them all. But they were setting up a temporary shelter in Tylertown, Mississippi. And I had come from Grand Rapids, along with our shelter supervisor, Sarah, to help, to provide some support. They needed boots on the ground help. And we had a sort of a gate in the front that would allow people to come in and look for lost animals, help us if they needed to surrender one. And as I'm standing at this gate, I see a young African-American guy walk up, and he's got jean shorts and a T-shirt, and they're all, I mean, they're ripped up and torn up, and there's mud and there's blood on them, and he's carrying this beautiful little white dog. And as he walks up, every step he takes, he leaves a footprint of blood on a step. Every time he walks up, he's got bare feet. And his story was that he was in one of the wards impacted most by Katrina when the levees failed. And National Guard came knocking on his door and said, it's time to go. Like, it's time, water's coming, it's time to go. And he said, all right, let me go grab my dog. And National Guard said, no dogs. At that time, dogs weren't a part of emergency response plans. No dogs, no nothing. You leave your dog, get in the, let's go, let's get out of here. And his response was, okay, hold on, I'll be right back. Let me go get some things. And he grabbed his dog and hid from the National Guard. He would not leave without his little dog. National Guard finally said, I got to go. Water's coming. It's time to leave. So they left, and eventually he ended up at home alone with his dog, and the water began to rise just as he said it was. Pushed him up into the first floor, into the second floor, till ultimately he stood for 3 days on a hot tin roof in New Orleans sun, barefoot, holding his dog, waiting for help. And the reason that that moment changed my life is we know that in that disaster, there were people like this individual who weren't as lucky and chose to die rather than leave their pet behind. And that is why that animals are now required to be part of disaster plans in terms of housing and response. But this man chose to die rather than leave his dog behind. Now, he didn't. Luckily, he was able to be saved. But extrapolate that to the decisions we have to make every day. How many people have to make a decision? Do I eat or does my dog eat? Do I take my medication or does the dog who needs medication take his medication? Those decisions that we make every day, and we were, and people make those decisions, and studies have shown that no matter your station in life, about 70% of people have pets, and they will choose their pet over their own health and safety. And so I took that experience and realized that maybe we aren't an animal welfare organization. Maybe we're a human-centered organization that works through the animals to help improve people's lives so they don't have to make those decisions. But that was a profound experience for me in seeing what people had gone through. It was absolute devastation. And to realize that people will choose to die rather than leave their pets.
All right. From 2008 to 2014, you had leadership roles in animal services sector in Louisiana, Tennessee, and New Mexico. Then in 2014, you come back home, and you get hired as president CEO of Michigan Humane, which had been formed in 1877. What was its first mission?
So it's you know, when I talk about the human element of our work, it's actually not something new. It's coming back to our roots. So Michigan Humane, in 1877, we were just the Humane Society because we were one of the only ones, if not the only one. And our role was two parts. One was horses, which at that time were much more common in Detroit. They were carriage and transport and everything in between. And the other issue that we addressed was women and children, the subject of domestic violence, protecting people because of the correlation between human neglect and human violence and animal cruelty. And just as an aside, as a matter of fact, the animal welfare movement, I mean, the child welfare movement in this country was started by a man named Henry Berg, who actually started the ASPCA. So the idea of animal welfare issues and human issues being correlated is not anything new. It's been around for about 150, 160 years.
All right. Tell us about Michigan Humane.
Yeah. First of all, I could not be more proud to work for an organization that has the impact that we have. We jokingly, but it's probably appropriate, don't call ourselves an animal welfare organization. We work through the animals, but our job is to impact the human condition, which is, do we create healthier communities, safer neighborhoods, and do we impact a more thriving economy? How do we impact the human quality of life? But just a little bit about who we are. We're the largest and oldest animal welfare organization, human-centered animal welfare organization in the state. We're about 150 years old. We operate two of the largest shelters in the state of Michigan, one in Westland, one in Detroit. We operate three full-service veterinary centers, which for many people, it's their only opportunity to see a veterinarian is through our facilities. We operate one of, if not the largest pet food pantry in the country out of Detroit. Last year, 2.3 million pounds of pet food to 12,000 families. We have an adoption center in Sterling Heights. Our admin offices are right down the Chroma building. And we have multiple satellite facilities. We impact the lives of roughly 100,000 families and pets every year. And we're really proud of that work in the community.
Speaking of the community, you could walk from your facility to the Golden Tower, the Fisher Building.
Mm-hmm.
In 2014, you built a new center.
Yep. So, first of all, I wouldn't recommend walking here today. It's a little bit cold right now. I will tell you, we did. We built the Mackey Center in 2016. It was actually 2016 we built that. It's really our flagship. Westland is actually a larger facility, but the Mackey Center is our flagship. It's where our work happens, and we intentionally place that building where it is right now in the North End. We've been in the North End since 1931, and you see a lot of animal welfare organizations maybe moving out into the suburbs a little bit, maybe more retail-friendly environment. We realized that in our industry, we weren't telling our story right. Everyone tells their story as the hero. Think of Sarah McLachlan and the arms of the angel, and it's look at what I've done to help these folks. We wanted to not be just in a community, but be part of a community. So we chose to stay in the North End, build that building there, and we wanted to be a true institution in the North End and in the city of Detroit, but we're really proud of what happens at that facility.
We're talking to Matt Pepper. If you want to learn more, www.michiganhumane.org. When we come back, we're going to ask him about a love affair.
Mm.
And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Matt Pepper. Michigan Humane is a private nonprofit organization providing animal welfare and sheltering services to the metropolitan Detroit area. A love affair. America has a love affair with its dogs and cats and pets. How do you explain that?
Oh, well, first of all, I thought you were going to get me in trouble with my wife here. She's at home, going to be listening here soon. So, pets are a source of true unconditional love. No matter what.
Dogs are.
You know what? We have another donor. I have to tell you real quick. We have another donor named Ralph Kaplan, who is just an incredible man, an incredible heart. And he often says, you know, I give for the dogs, cats get a free ride. There's also another phrase that says dogs have owners and cats have staff. So I get your thoughts. But then we'll focus on dogs. Dogs give us unconditional love, no matter what has happened in our day, no matter what we have done. You come home to something that loves you. You come home to something that craves nothing more than your attention. And they do so much for us in terms of giving us a reason to be active. Do you know you're more than 30% likely to be active if you have a dog? You're more likely to recover from heart attack or stroke issues if you have a dog because they give you a reason to get out. You're more connected to your community because you have a dog. I mean, come to one of our board meetings and you'll find 15 to 20 people who come in and go, I don't care about your politics. Show me a picture of your dog. Tell me what's happening in their lives. And it's just a source of love that we oftentimes don't get very many other places. And they're a reason to get up, a reason to be active. And they fill our lives with something special. And I have to tell you, I have not gone in my life without a dog in a long time. And I have two right now, two dogs, six legs, two little three-legged dogs. But I will tell you, every one of them has meant something different. Every one of them has gotten me through harder times, better times, different times. The ones I have now are perfect for the situation I'm in right now. And there are so many people who maybe don't have the personal connections that they might need, and their pets are their form of comfort. There's so many people during COVID that we ran into that only thing they had was their pets. And I would argue they wouldn't be here without those pets. They just give us a reason to get up, give us a reason to be happy, give us a reason to move, and add so much to our lives.
70% of Americans mm-hmm. have a pet.
What's wrong with the other 30%? I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet.
Give them time.
Okay.
Give them time. The cat lovers in this country love their cats as much as others love dogs.
Yep.
Talk about cats.
Yeah, you know, cats are just a different animal, but I'll tell you, you get the same level of affection for many of them. I would have a cat right now if my wife and my middle son weren't deathly allergic to them. I remember a cat growing up named Pogo. We named him Pogo because I had a bunk bed with my brother, begrudgingly shared a room with my brother. He's a younger one. And the cat would jump from the floor to my bed and lay with me and follow us into the woods and hang out with us. You know, it can be whatever you connect with. Some people crave that little more laid-back affection, which you get from a cat, versus the active affection you might get from a dog. There are people who share this feeling with bearded lizards and with snakes. I don't quite get that one yet, but I know there are people out there. There are people who have horses, who have domestic pigs, ferrets, domestic rats, mice, gerbil, anything in between. It really is what you connect to and what's good for your life. But, you know, cats are fantastic. We actually take in more cats than we do dogs at Michigan Humane. We do more cats. Now's the time to find one if you're looking for one. But they can give you that same level of affection. It's just different sometimes.
We're talking to Matt Pepper, President and CEO, Michigan Humane, www.michiganhumane.org. You mentioned that Michigan Humane started 1877 and really as an orphanage and also a place to help horses. Back then, Matt, most everybody had a horse, and only the very wealthy had a car.
Yep.
Today, everybody has a car, but only the very wealthy own a horse. And it's the moms and the daughters that own and take care of these horses. Why?
Well, I think, once again, it's what you connect to. Horses are really majestic creatures. I'll tell you, we do a lot of work with the Abraham Ranch, which is an organization in Clarkston, actually run by our current board chair, Katie Abraham, and her husband, Eric. It's a fantastic organization, and they are amazing. I will tell you one quick story real quick. Everyone says, you know, little girls say, I want a pony. The only animal that's ever kicked me was a pony. You don't want a pony. Get a full-size horse, not a pony. Ponies have tempers. But horses are just majestic creatures. And I'll tell you, you know, there's a reason that they use them for these prison programs. You know, you see how to rehabilitate people through horses. It's because you know where a horse goes if it doesn't want to? Nowhere. And you have to learn patience. And you have to learn respect. And you have to learn to treat them well. You have to learn to gain their trust. And that's something that some folks who have had trouble in their lives benefit from. I just think they're a different type of animal. People gravitate towards things differently. People have had horses in the past. They're absolutely amazing. Now, they are costly, and they require a lot of space. So I think it's maybe more of a life decision than having a cat or a dog. But they're fantastic. I'd have one if I could, but I don't think West Bloomfield wants one in the backyard.
Our late, great J.P. McCarthy once said, never own anything that eats while you sleep. And a horse eats while you sleep.
All right.
Okay, let's talk about a couple of people that their lives have been transformed by their animals. Cynthia.
Yeah.
A one-armed lady with seven cats.
Yeah, so this is a story that really also made me realize the impact that pets have and that we can have on people's lives. So Cynthia was just an incredibly great attitude, smiles on her faces, and she was in a rough spot. She had one arm. She had no legs and one arm, and she got herself on public transportation in a wheelchair to our pet food pantry before we had moved it for food for her cats during during COVID. And what did we do for the cats? Things you'd associate. We did sterilizing them, vaccinated them, got her some food. We now deliver it to our home when we can. But the real impact of her work is don't think about what we did for the cats. Think about her life during that time without any companionship or comfort. And that's what the pets mean to us in our lives. And what an inspiration about how far people are willing to go to make sure that, hey, if anyone's going to suffer, it's going to be me. It's not going to be my animals. And she knew all their names and had the treats and loved them all. And you want to see a woman smile when she's had a rough life? This woman was a good start. She's a great story and a great indicator of what our pets mean to us.
One more story, if you would.
I can tell you a quick story. We had a gentleman by the name of Tony. And this just goes to the evolution of how we think about our work. And Tony had 7 dogs. He had virtually no money to his name. And one of his dogs had been attacked by a neighborhood dog. He got in hold of one of his dogs and really ripped up the leg. And he got in a wagon and walked his dog a mile one way to our Mackey Center and said, "I just need help. I just need help." And I think our industry has a tendency to vilify people through the lens of poverty. You know, you struggle with money, you shouldn't have a pet. Well, that's not fair. People are going to have a pet, and everyone should somehow find a way. We can support that. And he ended up walking his dog for 2 weeks, there and back a mile, to get this dog's bandage changed every day. And what I think about with Tony is, it's easy to look at him and go, "Man, you're a problem." When in fact, you're not a problem. You're a hero in this neighborhood. These are all dogs that he had found running loose that needed help, that even though he couldn't afford to take care of himself, he sure as heck was going to find a way to take care of these dogs. And it also goes to show, you know, some of the issues that people in Detroit face that I don't have to deal with on a daily basis, which is, you know, I want to go buy some food for my dogs, but there's no markets. There's only a gas station where I can buy food for 4 times the cost in half a bag, half the size. So access to services is something that I don't think a lot of us realize are that significant of an issue. But this man was a hero. He walked his dog a mile every day there and back in a wagon, rain or shine, to get its bandages changed. And he's a hero in that neighborhood. He should be considered a hero. He's helping us do our job. Those animals aren't there. They're in our shelter.
We're talking to Matt Pepper. When we come back, we're going to talk about a modern-day phenomenon. And I'm Jack Crisula. And this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything is Possible, and I'm Jack Crisula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, "Work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble."
The great Ernie Harwell.
"My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God."
And the voices of our generation.
"I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis."
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything.
Spohom. I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything is Possible. We're talking to Matt Pepper, President, CEO, Michigan Humane. Matt, a modern-day phenomenon. Many people in their 20s make life decisions based on their dog or cat.
Yeah, so we often talk about, earlier I talked about our kind of three pillars of how we position our work, which is, do we create healthier communities, safer neighborhoods, and a more thriving workforce and economy? And the reality is, Detroit doesn't make it that easy to support people with pets. There's not a lot of great space. There's not a lot of public space in the communities for people to be free with their pets, to interact with other people. We have a few smaller dog parks here and there. Many of the companies sort of are hesitant to incorporate animal-friendly practices, although we have some fantastic ones, including sharing this building with us, our friends at S3, Cindy Paskey and Paul Huxley, which I often jokingly say are the second largest shelter in the state of Michigan just in their building alone. But the reality is, people right now, if you're in your 20s and you're looking as a business here in Detroit to recruit people, to attract talent, we have to recognize that pets aren't a choice. They're an obligation for most people. Most people would rather have a pet than anything else. There was a study that showed that almost 75% of people would take less money for a job that gave them more time with their pet. 40 to 50% of people were buying homes in the area for a dog they have or might get, not for the children, not for the school districts, but for a dog they might get. And the reality is, we do make decisions on our pets. You know, me, for example, do I go on vacation? That depends. Do I have boarding for my dogs? Do I have care for my dogs? Do I have someone to watch them? And right now, the generation that's coming into the workforce right now that's going to be our future leaders, they own pets at a higher percentage than any other generation, and they are making life decisions. And if you choose to ignore that, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage compared to organizations that are celebrating pets in people's lives, whether that's pet insurance, pets in the workplace, all sorts of things like that can help you attract and retain talent. And I'll tell you, if you want to learn more about how to do that, give us a call. We'll help you out.
All right. In 2019, you changed the official name of your organization to what and why?
Yeah. So, until 2019, we were the Michigan Humane Society. I think people know us as the Michigan Humane Society. And there's a variety of reasons. There's three big reasons. Number one is more of just the generic reason, which is the word Humane Society is a universal term. So people were mistaking the Michigan Humane Society as a overarching chapter of the Huron Valley Humane Society or Capital Area, when in fact those are great organizations doing their own work but not affiliated with us. Or were we affiliated with the Humane Society of the United States? And the reality is that's not true. We are a standalone organization whose primary service area is Southeast Michigan but has nationwide and statewide services from legislation to response. But we realized that we wanted to have a different relationship with the community. So we talked a little earlier about the hero mentality of our industry, telling people, look at what I've done for these animals and these people. We wanted to tell sort of through the archetype of the everyman, which is, we're going to pick you up, walk side by side, and do this together. We're going to be, you're the hero in this story. I'm just here to help. And so we changed our name to Michigan Humane and dropped the society for the other two reasons are a little more philosophical. One is the word society is inherently an exclusive term. People think of societies, they think of memberships and dues, and we wanted to be inclusive. We wanted the people that live next to our Mackey Center to feel just as included in our programs as the people who are supporting it in Oakland County. And the word society and the word being, again, more of an exclusive term, but the other one is the word humane, because humanity isn't limited to pets. It extends itself into lives of people, and there are two ends to every leash. There's the animal with the animal at the end of it, and then there's the person at the other end. And if you don't consider both ends of the leash, you're doing a disservice to either one. And so we wanted to be a human-centered organization and be Michigan Humane by helping people and pets and elevating the quality of life for everyone, whether you got two legs or four, or in my case, three.
You mentioned in a previous segment a pet food pantry.
Mm-hmm.
Then you made a statement that you'll dole out 2 to 3 million pounds of pet food to about 12,000 families, and you store that at the Gleaners Warehouse you have a partnership with Gleaners.
Yep. First of all, there's two organizations in this community who have been incredibly helpful to us, both Forgotten Harvest and Gleaners. Jerry and Adrian at both organizations respectively, great partners in helping us source and helping us distribute. What we recognized was, I think too often as nonprofits, we try to do things ourselves instead of recognizing that other people have some things down. You know, Gleaners and Forgotten Harvest, they know how to get food to people who need it. I know that families have pets. And so we did a study with Gleaners recently, and it was 50 to 70% of their people who they surveyed were giving their human food to their pets first, which means that if I'm not participating in their distribution, the human food is going to the pets and not its intended purpose. So we have a 26,000 square foot warehouse that we're co-housed with Gleaners. Again, we get sourcing through both of the organization, and we use their distribution sites to reach the families most at risk. But yeah, 2.3 million pounds this year to 12,000 families, and we hope to grow that number this year.
All right. God's given you a lot of angels, but two of them are named Frank Venegas, Lauren Venegas, and their team at Ideal Group. Last year, they bought you 280,000 pounds of dog food just for what Frank calls the Mexican dogs.
Yeah, so yeah, he's very, very straightforward that he only wants us to help the Mexican dogs. But he's a fantastic partner.
And a Mexican dog is any dog south of Michigan Avenue.
Exactly. Any dog that lives in southwest Detroit by Frank is a Mexican dog. He is the example of corporate responsibility. Again, you heard me mention Strategic Staffing Solutions. They do the same thing in many neighborhoods. But Frank is really invested in Southwest Detroit and its people. And that is the type of partnership that we want to help support. But yeah, he's been an incredible supporter of that community and our work in the community. He's helped us host community events to find out how we can best integrate into the communities, helped us host events there for pet food, also for vaccines. Just the incredible definition of really a corporate partner and a corporate responsibility.
In your 20-plus year career of animal welfare, Matt, what's the biggest thing that's taught you?
The biggest thing it's taught me is that changing the world isn't a job, isn't a title, it's an attitude. And that I love coming to work and that pets mean so much to us. And the job that we do at Michigan Humane changes people's lives. And I get to go home at night and know that I've done that. So I think it's believe in our works, believe in the impact of pets, and follow your heart.
Sir, speaking of attitude, your attitude is contagious, your enthusiasm, and what you and your team do is phenomenal.
Thank you.
Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoke.